honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our fascinating visit with 96-year-old Don Cooley of Watsonville, California. When the Battle of the Bulge began, he was one of 6,000 members of the 106th Infantry Division ordered to surrender. After 4 months as a prisoner, the Allies were pushing German forces back, and Don and other prisoners were marched away from the advancing troops. When we left off, he and his friend Charlie Ace had decided to take their chances and hide in a haystack.
Well, as soon as all the other people left, out of the woodwork came a lot of the local people who were to pick up things that these soldiers had left. It was now April. It was getting warm. We had these overcoats. People left their overcoats. They left anything that was heavy. And Charlie and I decided, oh, this is crazy. So one of these fellows came up to us, and there were loaves of bread that were left. So he says, you can't stay here. The Germans will be coming right through here before long. Go over here and hide. So it put us over in a ditch along the road as the Germans were retreating, and he and I were lying in this ditch hiding, and this guy said, wait here till tonight, I'll come and get you. So that we did, and now I remember my camera, and I thought, well, look, we're free now. I'm going to get this camera out, and I had 3 rolls of film, and so I said to Charlie, let's flip a coin and see. I want to take one picture. You take it or I take it. I lost, and so here we are lying toe-to-toe in the ditch, and I'm taking this picture of my feet and Charlie there.
I saw that picture in here.
Yeah. He came back at dark and got us and took us to his farm headquarters, which was a third of a mile away. He put us upstairs in his barn in the hayloft with cattle down below. And he said, wait here. And he brought us a most wonderful warm milk, warm meal, and that was great. And then I guess it was the next day, he came up again. He had 3 British soldiers with him. And he said, here, we want these guys to hide too. They'd been captured in North Africa way back. So I said, how did he find you? And they said, well, it was 4 o'clock, old chap. We had to get out and build a fire and make tea. And here are the Germans. Anyway, so the 5 of us were hiding now, thinking that the Americans would be there tomorrow because they were right back where we left them. And they didn't get there for 5 days. And meanwhile, he built us up physically with good food, which was a miracle for us.
What was his name?
Felix. And after the war, I sent him a barracks bag full of clothes when I got discharged, and I sent him a care package back in Poland. He wrote, and a little later he said, I got a farm. He said, could you send me 2 horses? And then the Russians closed down on Polish, on the mail. And in 1948, I was working in New York, and he wrote again and wanted to open up.
What do you think would have happened to you and Charlie without Felix if he weren't there to help you?
I guess we would have remained in hiding, or maybe we would have decided to walk back to the town where the Americans had stopped, because it was just a day's walk.
Was that nerve-wracking, hiding out in a ditch?
No, I don't think so. You know, a 21-year-old kid doesn't think these things through.
And you said it was a gradual process, and that's part of it. You say, hey, this is going to be a shortcut. If we stay behind, we won't keep marching away from the Americans. We'll meet up with them sooner.
Maybe they'll catch up to us.
Yeah. So what was the moment like when that finally happened?
Well, it was a blessed event. I've got pictures. Now is when I really used the camera to take pictures of the 5 of us in hiding, who had been in hiding, and Felix and his wife, and with the first American has come through with a tank. He had a truck that came up that took us back to his headquarters, which was in this town of Halle, which became an Allied prisoners of war repatriate ramp camp, where they accumulated all the American prisoners from a radius of a large area around there, of which there were many. So that's where we, in effect, registered in back in.
I think I just heard you call it a blessed event. Do you remember what that felt like? That this isn't a dream? You're actually free again and in American hands?
Well, it felt great. Gosh, we were just exalted. As soon as the guy showed up in the tank. And
it's a good thing to see, huh?
Yeah, well, of course, Felix took us in. The fact that we were free, but not free. Foot soldiers were going right through the underside of the barn, so we didn't breathe very hard. But the point is, he brought us, really brought us back to health, which is terribly important because a lot of ex-prisoners, all of a sudden, they got free. They just gorged on food. They got sick.
Right. We've heard a lot of those stories over the years. So you're officially liberated. You're a free man again. What happened after that?
Well, here we are in this repatriated Allied military personnel center there for several days to be processed. Of course, wondering, how are we going to get out of here? How are we going to get back to France and get home? There were hundreds of us there. And so to kill the time while we'd commandeer an automobile and drive around town and go to the brewery and get a case of beer, and pretty soon several of us just got tired of waiting and decided we'd gamble on another way out. And there field was not far from there, so we got a truck, took us out there, half a dozen of us, hoping a U.S. plane would come in because they were everywhere, and none did for a couple of days, but a C-47 came in one day with a British general on it who had business in there somewhere, and so we all went down and stood by his plane, and I said, you've got room for about 10 of us, haven't you? And he said, well, okay, old boys, and in we went, and we were flown out. The war wasn't over yet, and we were shot at going over Buchenwald and areas like that to Reims, processed, and on our way home.
That make you a little nervous when this C-47, which is not a combat plane, can't defend itself, is getting shot at?
Oh, probably, but, you know, we had a lot of things that made us nervous up to then.
I suppose so. Is there something that you look back on and you say, this was the most difficult aspect of being a prisoner, or the most challenging or trying?
Well, I was going to say I was thankful that I was a prisoner rather than having stayed to fight through that whole operation, except I didn't know about that whole operation. All I knew was that this was a terribly embarrassing thing to be in this situation. This was not fighting the war. Of course, food was the thing that was ever present, always talked about. So I'd say that was our biggest concern. Also, as we saw as time went on, the Germans had less food. And so we thought, well, that's us too. And so let's get this over with. And we were so thankful, of course, when it went as fast as it did.
I think I hear you saying that since the whole time you were a prisoner, you didn't know the big picture of what happened in the Battle of the Bulge. You didn't know that those guys suffered frozen feet by the thousands, that guys were killed by the thousands, wounded by the thousands. So once you understood that reality, you actually were thankful you spent those months as a prisoner?
I think I could say that, yes. Once you know what it's like, going to be like up there, which we did, it's not hard to wish you weren't there.
Well, what was it like to come home?
It was wonderful in that I think the thing that was most wonderful was how fast I got home. I was home in 30 days. Across the Atlantic and across the country to Lafayette, it just felt great to be home. I said, the war's over for me. I get back to school.
So you finish your mechanical engineering degree at Purdue, but decided you didn't want to be an engineer.
That's right.
That was a really good thing you decided that.
Well, I now realize how good a choice I made. I think it was far better than to have tried to have a life as a mechanical engineer.
Well, and you came out here to Stanford to work on your MBA, and that's where you met someone you're still spending a little time with.
Yeah, in fact, most of my time. All my time.
How did you and Diane meet?
Blind date ski weekend. She had a car, which we needed.
Where'd you guys ski?
Badger Pass.
So was it just the car, or was it something else?
Well, she was a lot of fun.
So it wasn't too long before you got married?
Oh, it took me 2 years to sell her.
You said you did, you know, you quit engineering to go into sales. So you had a good pitch for her? Or not so good if it took you 2 years?
Well, that would follow, wouldn't it? And it did.
But now you've got 68 years of marriage and children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Good. Yeah. I guess it's a good thing you survived 4 months as a prisoner.
Well, it sure is. I might have survived the war, too, had we not that not happened. But I don't know that. I do know this.
So what's your secret to having a marriage that's 68 years and counting?
Well, the first thing you do is to say yes. Get her to say yes. And after she says yes, I don't know. You know, people joke about that, the answer to that question. It's common interests.
You mentioned earlier. Oh, did you have something, Diane? She said you have values in common.
Yes. Yes, I should have mentioned that.
You mentioned earlier reading about Thomas J. Watson, the head of IBM, and that would come around later in your story.
When I graduated from Stanford, eager to get to work, an IBM interviewed at Stanford, and I had remembered that book that I'd read, that my father had, about Thomas J. Watson, who founded IBM, was still there. So I interviewed, liked what I heard, and so I remembered that Watson had been one of the highest paid men in America in 1935. I thought, well, that means there's more distance between starting salary and his salary, so there's a little more room in there. So I took the interview and was hired. I started out as a salesman selling that punch card equipment. And right at the time in the early 50s when the electronics were just being developed. And so I had a number of sales jobs around the country, management jobs and so on, from there until 1986. I met a lot of nice people and enjoyed the work and did fairly well.
And how long have y'all been here in Watsonville?
40 years ago this year because of her roots here.
A lot of that land is still in the family, and that land feeds a lot of the people listening right now. So if people go to the grocery store and buy a package of strawberries or raspberries and they say Watsonville, California.
You said Driscoll, didn't you? Two of our growers are for Driscoll.
Yeah.
And another is for Wellpick. I'll give them that also.
And I buy them both. I don't discriminate. And I'm sure wherever people are listening today, when they go to the grocery store and they see a pound of strawberries, it's going to have one of those labels on it. Or the raspberries. So I just want people to make the connection.
Yes.
That's being grown on your land, right?
Yes. I'm ever thankful for being an ex-POW.
Well, that's one of the questions I like to ask, because usually at this stage of life, you have some time to look back and reflect. So when you do that, is there something that you'd say you're most thankful for or even most proud of?
I'm thankful for so many things, so many I would call good breaks, or maybe I've done what has to be done to be eligible for them. Having a wonderful family and proud of the kids that are all out of jail and that are doing well and are devoted is something I'm really thankful for. That's a package in itself, and it's a big one. I just want to continue to live in a beautiful place like this and do what good I can with resources that I have and be granted X number more years.
I didn't ask you about the Honor Flight. So a year ago, you and your son got to go with Honor Flight Bay Area and see the National World War II Memorial and other things in Washington, D.C. What was that like for you? What'd you get out of it?
Oh, I just got tremendous pride out of seeing all those monuments, not just World War II, but the others of which I was less acquainted. And the fact that it was done and the fact that I could do it with my son was a big thing.
Did that Honor Flight experience give you any perspective on younger generations and how they may perceive you and your generation?
There's a big gap there, of course. But the younger generation, the school kids that were there in Washington at the same time, as there always are school kids, as you know, and we'd be in our wheelchairs being pushed through these memorials, and these kids had come along, put out their hand and say, thank you. I really choked up. Sure, they were primed to do that, but I think they knew what they were doing, I think, and I think they knew why they were there. It's the 15 to 25-year-olds that obviously don't have the same feelings. Every age group has a little different feelings.
If you could address all the 15 to 25-year-olds right now, is there something you would want them to understand?
One word, patriotism.
You said a few minutes ago you're thankful for the good breaks that you received along the way. Do you see that as chance, happenstance? Do you believe somebody was pulling strings on your behalf? How do you view all that?
I'm a man of faith, Christian faith, and my parental upbringing is something that pulled me along. My wife pulls me along.
The only other thing I need to say is thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for sharing that story with the rest of us.
You're welcome. Very welcome. Happy to do it.
That is Don Cooley. He'll turn 97 the day after Christmas, and unlike that boxcar 76 years ago, I know they're going to be singing to him this time. Maybe you'll think of him and his story the next time you sing Silent Night. Don't forget to check out the photos and video of Don at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.